This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Numbers. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Numbers, chapters 31 through 36.
Moses said to them, "If the children of Gad and the children of Reuben cross over the Jordan with you, every man armed for battle before the Lord, and the land is subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead as a possession. But if they do not cross over armed with you, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan." Then the children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, saying, "As the Lord has said to your servants, so we will do. We will cross over armed before the Lord into the land of Canaan, but the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us on this side of the Jordan." So Moses gave to the children of Gad, to the children of Reuben, and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. Notice the half-tribe of Manasseh was also a partner on the east bank. And so these 2.5 tribes will possess the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, not Oz, but Og, king of Bashan, the land with its cities within the borders, the cities of the surrounding country. But in the end, was this really a good idea? To stop short of the promised land, to settle on the east bank of the Jordan River? History confirms that it was not. For as we'll see, every time a northern invader launched an assault on Israel, the tribes that were on the east of the Jordan River would catch the full brunt of their wrath and their fury. You see, these eastern tribes had no protection. They would have been better off settling on the west bank where God had promised them all along. Well, verses 34 and 42 list the cities of Gad, Reuben, and Manasseh. And note the cities of Reuben here sandwiched between Gad and Manasseh. You could call it a Reuben sandwich. Does it make you hungry? Yeah, okay. I thought you'd laugh a little harder than that. How many of you have moved lately? It's tough, isn't it? Moving is a big deal. If you had a dad in the military or in the mafia, you probably moved constantly growing up. And yet, no matter how many times your family moved, I am sure that nobody here compares to the family of Israel. For chapter 33 tells us that the children of Israel moved 42 times in 40 years in the wilderness. Imagine moving 42 times in 40 years. Anybody done that? And we think we're a mobile society. And so chapter 33. All right, great. Chapter 33. These are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Now Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord, and these are their journeys according to their starting points. And he starts in Egypt. They departed from Ramesses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians. For the Egyptians were bearing all their firstborn whom the Lord had killed among them. Also on their gods, the Lord had executed judgments. Notice that. On the gods of Egypt, the Lord had executed judgment. Remember when we studied that? Each of the 10 plagues... was designed to show God's superiority over one of the false gods of Egypt. You remember? The Egyptians worshiped the Nile River. And so what did God do? He turned the Nile to blood. And write down the list. Then the children of Israel moved from Ramesses and camped at Succoth. They departed from Succoth and camped at Etham, which is on the edge of the wilderness. They moved from Etham and turned back to Pi-Hahiroth, which is east of Baal Zephon, and they camped near Migdol. They departed from before Hahiroth and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness. And you can get your map out in your Bible. And you can read through these names, and you can try to chart their course as they journey through the wilderness. I'm just going to kind of read off the names to you so you can kind of follow along. Marah, then they camped in Elam, then by the Red Sea, and then in the wilderness of Sin, and then Daphka, and then Alush, and then Rephidim, and then Sinai, and a lot of these names aren't up here. And then you've got a long list of names of cities, of areas between Mount Sinai and Kadesh. And then we get down to verse 38. Then Aaron the priest went up to Mount Hor at the command of the Lord and died there in the 40th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt on the first day of the fifth month. Aaron was 123 years old. Lived a pretty good life, didn't he? When he died on Mount Hor, now the king of Arad, the Canaanite, who dwelt in the south in the land of Canaan, heard of the coming of the children of Israel. So they departed from Mount Hor and camped at Zalmone, Punon, Oboth, Iyabarim, at the border of Moab, Eam, Dibon Gad, Almon, Dibalathium. Sounds like something you take for a sore throat or something. Dibalathium. They camped in the mountains of Abiram before Nebo. And finally, they camped by the Jordan River across from Jericho. Verse 50. Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you have crossed the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, destroy all their engraved stones, destroy all their molded images, and demolish all their high places. And we're going to learn a lot about these high places. They were pagan altars that were used to worship idols, used to worship the false gods of the Canaanites. They were called high places because they were usually situated on an elevated piece of ground. We're going to talk a lot about these high places and how they got Israel in trouble over the coming months. Now you shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell in it, for I have given you the land to possess. And you shall divide the land by lot as an inheritance among your families. To the larger you shall give a larger inheritance, and to the smaller you shall give a smaller inheritance. There everyone's inheritance shall be whatever falls to him by lot. You shall inherit according to the tribes of your fathers. But Moses issues a warning in verse 55. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall be that those whom you let remain shall be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land where you dwell. And boy, is this a warning to you and me as well. Ignore the sin that God wants to delete from your life, and it will end up an irritant, a thorn, a hassle to you. That bad habit you keep holding on to, that place you frequent that gets you in trouble, that non-Christian influence you still allow in your life, if you tolerate it, it will end up becoming a constant harassment. I know believers who get so pestered and so defeated in their spiritual life, they end up giving up on God, but there is no one to blame but themselves, for they choose to live with the enemy rather than drive him out. Guys, don't you make the same mistake. Drive out the enemy that's hindering you in your walk with God. Well, the chapter closes on an ominous note. God says to Israel that if you compromise, if you don't drive out the pagans in the land, moreover, it shall be that I will do to you as I thought to do to them. Boy, God's intention was to use Israel to judge the Canaanites, but if Israel compromises, she's the one that will be judged. Well, in chapter 34, Moses becomes a surveyor. And he outlines for Israel the land that God expects them to move into and to occupy. And he provides for them exact boundaries. Verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land of Canaan, this is the land that shall fall to you as an inheritance. the land of Canaan to its boundaries. And as you notice, go down the next few verses, verses 2 through 5, mark off the southern border of the land. The western border was simple. Verse 6, you shall have the great sea or the Mediterranean for a border. This shall be your western border. Verses 7 through 9 lays the property pins on the northern border. And then verses 10 through 12 survey the eastern border. And from the Golan Heights, the border came down to the Sea of Chinnereth. This is very interesting. The Sea of Chinnereth. It has another name. Do you know what it is? You know what its New Testament name was? Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee. Chinnereth was its Old Testament name. The word Chinnereth means harp. And when you go to Israel, we get up on top of the mountains right next to the Sea of Galilee, and you can look out over the whole sea, and it's in the shape of a harp. It's harp-shaped. That's why it was called the Sea of Chinnereth. The eastern border follows the Jordan River down to the Salt Sea or to the Dead Sea. In verses 16 to 29, the Lord gives Moses a list of men who are to divide the land among the 12 tribes. Eleazar, the high priest, and Joshua are to oversee the allocation, and each tribe is represented by one of the tribe's leaders. Now, if you've been paying attention, you'll realize that there is one tribe that's not mentioned in chapter 34. They seem left out, and that's the priestly tribe. The tribe of Levi. For God doesn't promise them a parcel of land. They get no property. Rather, God appoints cities for them. Now understand that Levi was not a farming or a sheep herding or a cattle herding tribe. The Levites worked in the service of the Lord. They worked in the tabernacle worship. And they were supported by the tithes of the people. God didn't give the Levites property because they didn't need land. Their inheritance was the Lord. Numbers 18, verse 20 had explained that. Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them, for I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. The Levites inherited the Lord, not a piece of land. God was their security. God wanted them dwelling in Him, not necessarily a lot of land. And yet the Levites needed some place to live. I mean, there was a laver in the tabernacle, but there certainly weren't any showers. And after a while, they'd start stinking up the place if they had nowhere to go home to and shower up and shave and so forth. And so God appointed for the Levites throughout all the land of Israel, various cities. Chapter 35. Oh, yeah. And the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho, saying, command the children of Israel that they give the Levites cities to dwell in from the inheritance of their possession. And you shall also give the Levites common land around the cities. They shall have the cities to dwell in, and their common land shall be for their cattle, for their herds, and for their animals. The common land of the cities which you shall give the Levites shall extend from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits all around. And you shall measure outside the city on the east side 2,000 cubits, on the south side 2,000 cubits, on the west side 2,000 cubits, and on the north side 2,000 cubits. The city shall be in the middle. This shall belong to them as common land for the cities. Now remember, a cubit was 18 inches. So 1,000 cubits equals about 1,500 feet. So they measured out 1,500 feet for their common land, the land where they plant their little gardens. They weren't actually being fed from their gardens and from their herds, but they had a few. Gave their dogs a place to roam and go and so forth. And I mean, they didn't keep their dogs pinned up in their backyard right next to their neighbor's house where the dog would howl and all and wake up their neighbor, constantly, and sort of what Levites today have to put up with. That's why they move. Hope my neighbor gets his tape. But anyway, they've had this common land where their dogs could kind of run and all and so forth. And then they had an additional cubits on top of that, which meant that they had about 3,000 feet out on all sides, you know, of their, you know, from their city. That means that the common land around the city was a little over 200 acres. The best of my calculation. It's kind of hard to understand this, to be quite honest with you. And so last night I got the Zondervan Pictorial Bible Encyclopedia out, and I looked it up to try to, you know, get their take on how to measure out the common lands. And you know what the thing said? This is kind of hard to understand. Now, among the cities which you will give to the Levites, you shall appoint 6 cities of refuge to which a manslayer may flee. And to these you shall add 42 cities. So all the cities you will give to the Levites shall be 48. These you shall give with their common land. There were 48 Levitical cities, and they're listed for you in Joshua chapter 21. 6 of these Levitical cities were specially designated as cities of refuge. Verse 14 tells us that 3 of the cities of refuge were on the east of the Jordan River, and 3 were on the west of the Jordan River, meaning that you were never more than a half day's journey to a city of refuge. Now, the city of refuge was a safe place for a person to turn into and to run from an avenger. If you ever watched an episode of Law and Order, Perry Mason, Matlock, whatever, you know the difference between first-degree murder and manslaughter. Murder in the first degree is intentional. It's premeditated. Manslaughter is unintentional. It's accidental. And in ancient times, if you were guilty of manslaughter, the family of the victim still had the right to avenge their relative's blood. And so they could come after you. They could kill you. And they would chase you down. They were serious about this. You were never safe. You were always looking over your shoulder. But God provided the manslayer a safe place to flee. He could duck into a city of refuge. And while he was there, he was safe. He was protected. He was shielded from the avenging party until he could be tried and declared innocent. And these 6 cities of refuge were scattered across the land of Canaan, and they were accessible from every corner of the promised land. Now, verses 16 to 21 describe cases of murder in the first degree where the murderer deserved to die. Verses 22 through 24 give examples of the manslaughter where a person qualified to run into a city of refuge. And in verse 25, it outlines the duties of the Levites once they get there. So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall return him to the city of refuge where he had fled, and he shall remain there until the death of the high priest who was anointed with the holy oil. Upon the death of the high priest, the manslayer's pardon became permanent, and he could return to his home, no longer vulnerable to any vengeance. Of course, Jesus is the ultimate city of refuge. And this all speaks of Jesus. This is a type of our salvation. Run to Jesus, and you are safe. Stay in Jesus, and you are safe. And like the manslayer of old, your pardon has also become permanent because of the death of the high priest. For Jesus is our high priest. And when he died on the cross, it sealed the deal on our amnesty. Now we are fully free and forever free. For Jesus' blood, as the writer of Hebrews tells us, saves us to the uttermost. That means you're as saved as you can get when you're in Christ Jesus. I like that. He saves us from the guttermost to the uttermost. Did you know that? But if the manslayer at any time goes outside the limits of the city of refuge where he fled, and the avenger of blood finds him outside the limits of his city of refuge, and the avenger of blood kills the manslayer, he shall not be guilty of blood because he should have remained in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the manslayer may return to the land of his possession. And again, here's a lesson for us. Salvation requires that we stay in the city of refuge, that we abide in Christ, that we continue in our faith, that we persevere, that we endure. Guys, perseverance and endurance are a part of our faith. They're a part of saving faith. Well, verse 29 tells us, "And these things shall be a statute of judgment to you throughout your generations and all your dwellings. Whoever kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the testimony of witnesses, but one witness is not sufficient testimony against a person for the death penalty." It took two or three witnesses. "Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death." In other words, freedom should never be sold. All too often in courts today, the verdict rests on who can afford the best lawyer. "And you shall take no ransom for him who has fled to his city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the land before the death of the priest. So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land, and no atonement can be made for the land for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. Therefore, do not defile the land which you inhabit, in the midst of which I dwell, for I, the Lord, dwell among the children of Israel." Now, back in chapter 27, we read about four girls. They were the daughters of Zelophehad. And where God sided in favor of them, you remember in chapter 27, God ruled in favor of equal rights for these four women. You see, in ancient times, it was customary to pass down land to sons and not daughters. But Zelophehad's four daughters were his only offspring. And these women thought that it would be appropriate that they inherit their father's land. Moses asked the Lord about this, and you remember, God sided with the girls. Well, now in chapter 36, the case comes back up on appeal. Now, the chief fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of the sons of Joseph, came near and spoke before Moses and before the leaders, the chief fathers of the children of Israel, and they said, "The Lord commanded my Lord Moses to give the land as an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel, and my Lord was commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of our brother Zelophehad to his daughters." Now, if they are married to any of the sons of the other tribes of the children of Israel, then their inheritance will be taken from the inheritance of our fathers, and it will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry. So it will be taken from the lot of our inheritance. And when the jubilee of the children of Israel comes, then their inheritance will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry. So their inheritance shall be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. If you give these women equal rights, they're going to carry their property into their marriages. And it could ultimately create an unequal distribution of the land. It'll spoil God's allocation of the land to the various tribes. Well, they had a point. Then Moses commanded the children of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, "What the tribe of the sons of Joseph speaks is right." And Moses has a solution. If a woman is the heir to a piece of property, she should only marry within her same tribe. That way, no tribe would lose any land to another. The book of Numbers closes with verse 13. "These are the commandments and the judgments which the Lord commanded the children of Israel by the hand of Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho."
In Numbers 6, 24 through 26, we read, "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." Today, we here at Sandy Adams Radio want to speak this beautiful blessing over your life. When you find yourself in a place of turmoil, trust that Jesus is with you. He's turned his face toward you and wants to bless your life. If you don't know Jesus personally, we would love to introduce you. Please give us a call at 770-736-2828. We'd be honored to share with you the life-changing love and forgiveness of Jesus Christ and pray with you about anything you're facing. Our phone number again is 770-736-2828. If you'd like to hear today's message again or find other teachings from Pastor Sandy, visit our website at sandyadams.org. Did you know you can also take Sandy Adams Radio on the go? Simply download the Sandy Adams teaching app on your smartphone. You'll then have great, sound biblical teachings to add a spiritual boost to your busy day right at your fingertips. Visit sandyadams.org to find the link. You'll also find an online store of resources available for purchase and much more information about Pastor Sandy and this ministry. Pastor Sandy will continue teaching verse by verse through the book of Numbers on the next edition of Sandy Adams Radio.